bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
That's me. Hi, everybody.
So, Bryce,
hi.
You embarked upon a new endeavor. You have started this, the gaming newsletter, your game news, video game newsletter.
That's right.
I am a subscriber. I was from day one, proud to say.
Thank you.
And we're what? How many weeks into this now? 3 weeks?
Let's see. The sign up page was created February 9, so about a month now.
Cool.
About a month now.
What's the update on that?
So here's the update. So I'll just show the number. I don't care about showing the numbers here. So one thing that has been nice is that it doesn't seem like anybody has unsubscribed to this point. Mm-hmm. We are up to about 86 subscribers. Oh, I guess there were two bounces. So I guess people either submitting the wrong email address or maybe a couple people did unsubscribe. But generally, like every couple of days I'll get an email or a notification saying a few people have bought or have subscribed. It's a free newsletter. And then like the open rates have been, it's interesting, the open rates have like gone down precipitously, and I have a hard time telling if that's because it's the time of day, if it's the subject line, if it's something else. So like the first one that went out had a 70% open rate, which is incredible even for just a content only newsletter. But I sent one out the 29th? No. I sent one out 2 days ago on Friday, and or maybe Saturday, and Friday and Saturday. Oh, because I did a resend. The first initial time it went out, only 25% of people opened it, so that's 21 opens. And then I did a resend because after 24 to 36 hours, MailChimp says, "Hey, you should resend this to everybody." That resend only got 8 more opens, which is unfortunate, especially because that one was especially long. It was one where it had been a little while since I had read, so I ended up writing a lot. And so I haven't quite nailed in. Is it maybe it's just the subject line and therefore the big attractors of the email are not quite what people want just yet, or is it the time of day? Both of those were sent around 5 p.m. Who knows?
So I wonder, and you know, this is me always looking at things like trying to find the technological fix. I think like newsletters are great from the point of view that you control the email, you control your audience. It's not an algorithm. It's not something else that somebody else is going through. They're a nice medium different than like, the problem with blogs was that unless people favorited a blog, and after a certain point, it comes hard. And if people use most people don't use RSS feeds, right? That's been one of, RSS was one of the biggest lessons for me to learn, was the world does not do things the same way that I do them or my friends do them. In RSS in particular, you know, the idea of using an RSS reader to my girlfriend does that because, you know, I showed her how I got it, but I don't think, do any of your friends use RSS readers? No.
Yeah.
None of them do that. Right. And which means that, you know, a lot of people, that's why a lot of people get their stuff from Facebook. A lot of people get their stuff from, and so that the advantage of newsletters is everybody gets email. And so everybody gets that and it works there. But the disadvantage of email is if I get your email, they always like, they used to say, "Oh, send it Tuesday morning, has the best open rate." Then everybody read that. And then everybody sent it Tuesday morning. But if I get it Tuesday morning and I'm not able to read something till Thursday, by Thursday, I'll have forgotten.
Yeah.
What there.
Cause you'll have gotten 50 more emails in that time.
Yeah, and I wonder, I don't know. I just wonder, like, and I'm, this isn't trying to solve what's going on here as much as just more of a bigger level thing. Like, I wonder if there's something for like an app that basically what it is, it's the thing I used, an app that you use for email newsletters. Just say it's just an email thing that accepts them. And that way I open up the app and there's the thing and it makes it in this nice sort of readable sort of format or something. Or think of like what Flipboard did or something. Like, almost wonder like if there's something to the idea of, you know, it's just an email client, whatever, for newsletters.
Interesting. Yeah, that does sound a little like Flip, or even like that sounds kind of like the Apple News approach to handling, you know, essentially RSS data, which is like, zhuzh it up a little bit so it looks nice, you know, make it rich, or like digital magazines, right, where I don't know if it's the iBook format or some iMagazine thing that they do, but they have a way to have rich content within some of those magazine editions. Yeah, that would be interesting. But at what point are you just making, say, an app for Medium that pulls Medium posts or just simple blog posts?
Think about it from this point of view. The idea is that it's purely for a thing that already exists, email newsletters, right? And the idea that would be that, like, you know, when Bryce would, and it also separates it from everything else, because yours is content, because the problem with our inboxes become this disposal that everything gets thrown into, right? And we've come up with lots of techniques and things to sort of sort and handle this, but this pipe just gets more and more stuff pushed into it. And there's a lot of stuff that I really want to get, but a lot of stuff that goes through there is like, you know, you get things that are like invoices and things like that. And that's technically an email, but it's a very different form of communication than a personal letter back and forth, or, you know, your newsletter is a very different form of content. And I think that people have been working, coming up with some brilliant strategies for trying to sort, you know, in, you know, we've had Inbox and all these other tools to try to make sense of it. And we're still trying to do it. I think part of it is because email, we have to step back and say, what is email? Email is just an address that anybody has, that address can send you
whatever
text and images and pictures to, and it gets sorted by who this is, but those things could be wildly different. And we try to parse some of the stuff out. Like, I think Slack was a really good approach towards like, let's take corporate communications and put them into a thing that's kind of like IRC, kind of like this other thing. Let's do that. Let's have things like Twitter and Facebook, which do that. But I think that if you say, well, I like the idea of subscribing to newsletters, I like the idea of doing this, but I want to be able to read them in a thing other than my email client. I want them to be open when I click. Because like I do that thing where I run out of things to read, and then I'm like scraping the web for stupid stuff. But like if I had like, oh, why don't I just subscribe to email newsletters? I guess the point to make it different is the idea is it's literally just a client for reading email newsletters. You know, and you don't, all you would do, what's that?
That would be interesting. I like your bringing up Slack, because that is a really good case of trying to eliminate traditional emails out of the inbox and replace it with something more nimble. And so I almost wonder if your idea almost has to be even more divergent from email. I don't know. If either you go more divergent from email like Slack and have it be its own new type of media, or you keep it some sort of hook into email such that you keep an open standard.
Huh. Well, yeah, I would make it a thing that literally is your email. You, Bryce, don't do anything different. You send your email out there. Me, Andrew would say, oh, well, why don't I give you this address, which forwards, like, remember Kindle, like you can forward stuff to your Kindle. You can give out a Kindle, and it's hard, and it's reading things on a Kindle that aren't eBooks is frustrating. But it would literally be like, either I would have it in my inbox, and I guess you just forward it to this thing, and then it would go into this client. And like you as the Bright, nothing would change for you. I, as the consumer, would say, oh, I'm going to sign up with my, you know, my eStack or whatever my email, you know, whatever thing, newsletter thing. And it's just going to go right into there, and I'll get notifications that four or five of the things that I've signed up for are there.
That would certainly be interesting, because that would really upend not just how people read newsletters, but I think it could upend the blogging environment, right? I mean, if you're at the mm-hmm. point where you've got a specific client that has notifications, but possibly runs on email, but may also have some sort of, I don't know. I think that's an interesting idea for sure.
Yeah. Why? Again, somebody in the chat says RSS. So you're like, no, the goal is to avoid it, because the problem is RSS is too technical. The idea is we have email. The idea is just, it's a separate email client that you could use for newsletters. It just literally is a thing that is, you know, an address of either something you forward to it from your inbox. You set rules, but that's sort of a pain in the ass. But you could just be like, here's the address for, you know, at the, you know, After Things reader. And it just goes to there, and I open it up, and it feels more like, you know, Apple News or Flipboard or what, it feels like that. And it's all the newsletters I subscribe to.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be really interesting, because I would not be opposed to, I mean, as if I have any stake in doing it either way, but I don't think I would have any opposition to doing something outside of, say, the email system that I'm using today, only because there are a lot of limitations on how you have mm-hmm. to format emails stuff for now. Where, like, if I knew that what I could send out to people would be a little more feature rich, could be, you would not have to worry as much mm-hmm. about, you know, data and how much someone has to download to see images or whatever. If you could have some sort of video element, GIFs element, mm-hmm. that doesn't feel onerous and doesn't feel like with this email, when I was setting up the first one, you know, MailChimp does have a lot of really nice options for formatting and setting it up to look a certain way. But I'll tell you what, a lot of those fonts, a lot of the non-standard web fonts that they offer, don't show up in many places. Like on my very expensive phone, if the font did not show up right. On my Chrome browser through Gmail, those fonts did not show up right. And if those two cases, those fonts don't show up right or have to be replaced with a standardized, you know, sans serif font, A, why are you giving me the option? And B, what is up with this standard to be like this? Like, I would be, as someone who's only one foot in the water, I would be down for a different standard if it meant it could look nicer and could look more media rich.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the goal is to avoid, you know, like the ideal world would be like, you're like, hey, everybody, I got a newsletter, and here's the newsletter. And by the way, if you want, you can get it on After Things Reader. You know, what's After Things Reader? Oh, it's one place to read all of your newsletters, you know, and it gives you these features. Then you, as a content creator, you know, the big hurdle is sort of like everybody who has existing newsletters, it's like they're not going to want to shift. But if you tell people, like, if you push it to here, you might be able to figure out to incorporate features that you could do in your regular MailChimp or whatever, but when it gets received on the After Things Reader, it knows to, you know,
yeah,
how to handle.
That would be a good hybrid approach, yeah.
Because another part of it too could just be like, I mean, because thinking from a technical point of view is like, MailChimp says, if you want, read it on the web, and it gives you that URL, and it could just be like a thing that collects those URLs too. Like, I'm just thinking from a technical point of view, but, you know, the problem always is that, like, you can have a technical, you've got to make something. You know, I think about this because, you know, Bryce knows more about this than probably what I've talked about on the microphones. Like, I build stuff all the time. That's like my hobby. I build things, then I go, man, I want to build something else, because I'm in love with the idea of making things, but I never really commit to anything long enough because I never feel like, oh, this is the thing I need to take and go somewhere. But one thing I become aware of is, like, you can build something that's pretty clever. But, you know, they talk about the idea of something has to be 10x better. It has to be 10x better than everything else, you know, and you go like, well, Facebook wasn't 10x better than Friendster. Like, no, it was. The 10x was the fact that Facebook, when you're on a college campus, you know, everybody, you know, it was everybody was there, you know, and that's where these innovations come along, is where you figure out, like, you know, one, you've got to make it pretty friction free. And two, the benefit so strong to people.
Right.
Oh, no.
I mean, to get someone to, you know, like, these are hypothetical problems, but, like, if someone has to keep track of a secondary email address that they put in when they sign up for newsletters, how often are they signing up for newsletters? Are there enough newsletters to justify going through the whole process? Like every step of the, you have to be considerate of every step along the consumer path, which is difficult when you're trying to do something brand new, right? I mean, it's one thing when you're like Amazon and you can make stuff feel easy, but also e-retailing is a known thing. This would be a brand new take on something.
Yeah, one of the things you can do is that it is a lot easier. We live in a world of platforms where you could create an app and you could say, okay, do you want to connect this to your Gmail?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And it could go through your Gmail and show you like, oh, here are all the newsletters. Which ones do you want to show up? Boom, boom, boom. You know, there are things like that where you could figure out like how to make it easier to do that. Also, because I think about that the idea of email, the difference between email and a blog post is email is somewhat ephemeral. I mean, a blog post or theoretically are, but blog posts are still up there. And I think about what would you do when you have something that you can generate really quickly and throw out there, you know, like an email, but it has a semi-permanent sort of nature. You know, I think about Brian and scam stuff and that. The idea of that a catalog that assembles itself, you know, inside of it. I mean, I'm thinking more abstractly now, but I don't know. I mean, it's just a thing to think about. But back to, you know, what you're working on. I'm looking at your – I wonder if I may make suggestions.
Sure, please.
I think that when I opened the, and I remember when I opened this up before, when I think you did great because you did the anchor, you did the anchor links and all that are great. And I don't know how easy it is, but I think about maybe the, on your list of stuff, the blue is very faint for me.
Oh yeah.
And so when I go to read it, it's harder to read or see because when I go look at this, it blends in.
Okay. That's a good note. Cause I think that's just the default blue.
Yeah, okay. I know. You did everything right. This is just,
That's a worthy thing. Like, okay, yeah, like that should definitely be darker. That was something I was thinking of, a little that I did not have as much time to dive into, but I do want to take another look at color.
Yeah, you're doing everything right. You're putting the thing out there, and you keep because I'm on my iPhone here, and
he's pulling it up. Oh yeah, that is really light. It almost looks like it's desaturated, but it could just be the webcam.
Yeah. So when I go look here, it is hard to read that.
Weird. Okay.
So I would consider...
And on this, well, I guess I think that's a post-open concern for sure. Though I guess if someone had that issue previously, then there's always, you know, rollover. It just leads to the overall image. Like, oh, I open these up and the first thing is it's hard to... Okay, yeah.
You know, the subject line is an amazing, the art of the subject line is fascinating because it is such a thing that it's a tricky sort of thing when you think about what makes you want to open. And you know, I try not to use myself as an example because I'm sometimes too reactionary. I'm too like, oh, well, I don't want to read this because you did this or whatever.
That's a good headspace because that is how people are. I mean, that's how I am. If you hit me too many times with an email, or if you hit me with the same thing too many times, or if you look at me, if you look at me sideways, there's nothing keeping me here other than my goodwill.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm scrolling through my email inbox, looking at what did I? Like, I don't open most of my emails now. Like, I just don't open most of them. I still get stupid stuff from Medium, which I didn't ask for, and. Yeah, how many of these places just give you this sort of, they claw into it?
But maybe I do need a more attractive headline then, because I know the way I had been handling headlines is like, how many of the topics that are going to be in it can I put in here in also in under 9 words, when maybe I need a more active voice for a subject line?
I think you have one featured. Think about one featured sort of thing. One featured thing that you do, the one featured thing, like the one last one, like the headlines, you know, Baby Yoda in such and such a game. Like, oh, Baby Yoda, you know,
right.
I'm going to click you on that. I think that's a thing to think about is that, because I look at, I look at where do I open, you know, when do I, what do I open? What do I not? Anyhow, sorry, I'm being distracted here, but I think maybe focus on one headline, one specific thought, you know, might be a thing to try. Because, like, I don't know what any of that, I mean, I know what Prisoner's Dilemma is, but I don't know what any of that means.
Yeah, no, I think, so the subject line for this last one that just went out is Zoom Zoom, comma, Prisoner's Dilemmas, comma, and Hacker Man, question mark, which, yeah, definitely you're right, none of those, that is all good, that would all be an interesting, a thing to remind people if they were somehow already, had already read it. But it's definitely not the attention grabber for sure.
Yeah. And you know, this is all, like I say, you're doing everything right. You're putting things out and you're iterating and experimenting. And so I would try the, like, what was the most interesting thing in that newsletter, the most interesting thing about this, you know, and I would try that as your hook, yeah. You know, cause that, the idea of, let me get one thing and then, like, well, by the way, here are these other things here. I would try that. I'd be curious to see, try that for a few and to see what works.
Yeah, I'll do that because, obviously I want it to do well.
You've got enough people doing A/B test too.
I think A/B testing, I think that might be a paid feature. I think we might be getting into paid feature territory, which I would be happy to experiment with once I feel like I have a little bit more of a fun foundation.
I just, like, I'm in that $80 a month for MailChimp and never, not sending anything sort of camp. And I think try that. Yeah. Try to get, like, the most, cause then I know the thing I'm going to get, the thing, like, I know that, like, when I send out my email list, and you have a really high open rate, though, by the way, your open rate is actually really good.
Sure.
But, like, I know when I send out an email, here's the way I think, like, for me, I know that most people won't open it in general. And so I look at the subject line as my content, which is different than you, but I use the subject line as my content. And
no, I think I think that's a good point. I mean, ideally, you know, people sign up for my list because they want to read it. And so, I mean, I think it's difficult to compare it, but I would ideally hit 100% because all of those people said, I would like to read this.
Yeah, and that's why I was getting to the idea of the app, because it's more like, I think the will is there, but it's just but, like, for anybody else, you know, it does different sort of email marketing. Like, think about the subject line as your content. So when I send out a thing, I'm like, my new book, like, I have a new book, Girl Beneath the Sea, comes out in a month. Like, Girl Beneath the Sea, my new novel, is available now. And that way, everybody knows that. Everybody who looks at their email knows, because I don't say new book. What's new from Andrew Main? Because, and that's the, and I think I see so much of that, like, find out what's new. Cause, like, somebody writes those emails, like, oh, this is, they're going to want to know. They got 20 emails with similar titles of, like, find out this exciting thing. And 20 years later, we're burned from these BS. Like, here's a 5% off coupon. My gift to you. Like, F you. I hate that. My gift to you is tiny discount to buy a thing from me. Like, I've had to keep, like, know who to market. I want to, like, do you really think somebody's going, oh, well, thank you. Thank you for this generosity, you know, anyhow, I think that doing the content is, like, really good content. I read that subject and you've already advertised to me. And that's a really, really strong way to do that. You know, the application for you is, you know, the version of that is your subject line. I should know what it means, should be clear to me. I understand the thing that's in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, part of where I got in my head about it is, especially this last email has so much stuff in it because it was, I've only been able to do one once a week basically. And so that's meant, like, I've still been playing a lot of stuff and a lot of news has come out. And so there's, like, almost 10 different items in it. And so my brain is like, well, I have more stuff. I want to let people know that there's a lot in here, but it ended up being muddled for a subject line.
Yeah, but it's, I think, like I said, you're doing everything right. You know, I would say, you know, play with that. And the email itself is, can you put a space below each section so you separate the header from the thing above it? Because that's one of the things I look through. It's like, oh, I'm like, oh, this is, no, wait, this is a separate sort of thing. Because I know in MailChimp, I think you can drag a box or do something like that. Because like in mine,
I can. So there are lines breaks at some places.
Some of them, yeah.
But there are also the graphic headers that also I thought break it up. But I can definitely add more space.
Sometimes I see the lines. Those are good. I think that's good. It's like, yeah, definitely the lines.
JC Calhoun in the chat says, what is the value proposition for the letter? Who is it for? I've read it, but it doesn't have a voice yet to me. I think that's a good question, and something I'm trying to suss out is is the balance between say impressions on having played a game and here is some thoughts about it and whether it can be recommended or not. And here are some news topics, and there are a million news topics. So these are the important news topics that you need to have a sense of. I don't know that I have a good balance between either of those two. I think right now at least the launching point was I would like to be writing or having more of a voice about games. And I need to get started. So
here's a suggestion on that note. And also let's go to the top. Let's go to the top section where you have your table of contents.
Sure.
Is what if right below in this one, once you do this, you have hey folks, Bryce here. Excited about this one. If anything, check out, you know, this thing on Overdrive City and the thing about, you know, how Riot made a counter, blah, blah, blah. You know, these are kind of a couple of my favorite ones.
A foreword, basically.
Price. Yeah, right below the table of contents, just put above or below, but right there, just a little, hey, Bryce here, you know, thanks, you know, like, hey, folks. That might be a nice personal sort of touch, because I think, why not? You know, and a thing, too, like, I will tell you for everybody, you and everybody else here, you know what I found gets me a really good response rate when I want to tell people I have a book out or whatever?
What?
When I send a photo of the book, I put my face in there holding the book. Because I go, oh, it's Andrew. Oh, cool. Oh, that. And I go, oh, cool, Andrew. But it reminds them. It's not a faceless. This is not a faceless entity. They see the face. So maybe a little box with a little avatar circle with your, Bryce, you know, just subtle, but right there, like, we see your face, you see this, and that's a step towards, you know, the branding of you and whatever. But like, that's the thing, because I used to like, oh, here's a photo of the book. I'm like, no, I'm gonna hold up the book and smile and point at the book and look, make a dumb smile, because when I send that to people, people go, oh, cool, hey, it's Andrew. I like Andrew, or not. If I like Andrew, oh, he's got a book. And then it's like, you know, the eyeballs on tip jars.
Oh, sure. Just, you know, make it feel homey a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it personifies, anthropomorphizes it. So putting your face in there. So I think that not in a super highlighted, stylized one, but just, you know, one of your lovable avatars, whatever, and they're like, hey, from Bryce, just like this, excited about this one. I got to talk about blah 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 da da da. Really short and sweet. So this, and also if you just want to get one point across, it's there.
Yeah, that's a really. These are all really good ideas. I'm definitely gonna work them into future emails. And also just I think part of my react, like, beyond just the subject line, part of my reaction and handling of this last one has been because there's so much stuff, and I still have so much stuff I want to write about, but I can only fit in one email a week or so, when this is more stuff than I thought would, more items in an email than I thought there would be. And even this one, I had considered, like, okay, there are 8 items here. We should cut this in half and send one out now and draft another one and send it as a new thing in 2 or 3 days, because it was a lot. It was a kind of a to-do.
Yeah. And that's the hard part, is you might want to just sort of think about doing half as much. You know, you might just want to focus on, like, hey, what's in, and just trying that. That's the hard part, is, you know, what to say, what not to say, you know. But again, I'm excited you're doing this. You know, I'm, you know, I'm a big fan. And then to see you, you know, whenever one of my friends is putting themselves out there and doing something cool and new is great. And again, your heart's into this, and it's great. You know, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to kind of like when I was doing Trending Lemon last year, or like, and constantly iterating it over time. Like, I'm excited to do that with this in a new thing that is relatively new to me, because I like I said when we first talked about it on this show, it's like I want it to be, I want it to feel easy for the reader, and I want it to feel different than what people usually use newsletters for or use writing about video games for. So
cool. Another suggestion, another note is, and again, this is just to happen to do it, the MailChimp is lovely in many ways and frustrating to others, is in your paragraphs, add an extra space between them, because like in the one I'm looking at, at the Apple Mail client.
Oh yeah. There's, and it really did not add much of a break.
And it is a frustrating thing because, like I said, you can write an email and you can do everything absolutely right. You put the proper breaks and stuff, but email gets very wonky as how it handles paragraph breaks and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's one of these things that I've done this multiple times where I'll push a thing, publish a thing, and my brain never processes that until I look at it. I'm like, oh, this is one big glob of text. And I broke this, and I did everything I was supposed to do to break to, like, I built, you know, for fun, I built the blog by email, you know, blogbyemail.com, which was just, you know, my own way. Let me try writing, you know, blog posts by email. And I thought I did everything right. And then I looked at the formatting. I'm like, how do I had to go create all these little hacks and stuff just to get it to format right.
Yeah.
You know, because what's readable versus whatnot. So,
yeah. And that should be something easy to fix. MailChimp does have a pretty good design. It has a relatively robust design engine, so I'm pretty sure I can add larger paragraph breaks there. Yeah.
Yeah, I dealt with that all the time with MailChimp, though, was I would go put things in there, and I had to go back. Oh, shoot, it's a big glob.
Well, especially this one where the two large text sections are, like, especially large and especially have many paragraphs. That's definitely – I know that I'm saying it. I'm like, yeah, that's not easy to look at.
That's a thing too about, like, in printing and publishing is funny because, like, I've talked a lot about self-publishing and, like, my strong advice, like the do's and don'ts, and a lot of them came from things that I did that I'm like, oh, this was dumb, I shouldn't have done this. Like, my most basic one, like, there are two letters that I can immediately will tell me if a book is self-published on the front cover.
Yeah.
Two letters will tell me right away this was self-published.
BY.
The letter B and Y. When somebody writes by, you know, and I got a book from somebody who did a really good job of their book, pretty good job formatting, everything like that, and they put by on the front. I'm like, and it's not, it's a tiny thing. It's a very, very tiny thing, but it's like, man, this looks pro, except for that. And it's not like, oh, it's a deal breaker. I've seen worse from people in the publishing industry. I've had friends that, like, have self-published, and I've encouraged them, given them money to go do it, and said, let me just help you get it done. And then I get their book, and I see that they used, like, they've done fiction, but they did paragraph. You don't use paragraph breaks in narrative. You might use it in nonfiction. In fiction, you use indents. You know, you indent each paragraph.
I see.
And you can do that in nonfiction too, but in fiction, you just standard is just to do indents, whatever, right? And I pick up their book, and every paragraph is spaced. It's like there's space between each paragraph. I'm like, holy crap! Like, this person, besides the fact their graphics and stuff were muddled and not clear and whatever, and, like, it was just like, how has this person been in the industry? And I reopen up their book. I'm like, have they ever read an effing book? You know,
without putting that person on blast, how long had they been in the writing and self-publishing space?
A long time.
Really?
A long time.
Had it always been self-publishing?
I don't know. I mean, I think they've been involved in publishing extensively. So, I mean, it's a thing that...
Because that seems like one of the subtleties of a profession where if you're just striking out on your own, you might not ever have anyone say, oh, you know, it'll actually look... There's actually this subtle thing here between these types.
No, this person's worked on pro publishing. They've been published author, whatever, all sides of it. But it's also a thing that, like, putting out your first book is like a first is a lot of work. And often you see a thing or you don't want to see a thing because you put all this effort in and you may not know how to fix it. And you just sort of go, oh, okay. But then it's sort of like, and I went through that, man, like, you know, my first couple of years of self-publishing, besides the spelling mistakes, was just, you know, learning things like, where the even and the odd numbers go on pages. You know, which one's odd, which one's even, you know, where does that go? You know, and then you get into gutter size, all that. But then, like, yeah, how do you space, you know, when I did my first, I took my first book, Grendel's Shadow, and tried to make that into a print book, you know, getting the font sizes. I mean, I've made all these mistakes, you know. And I would say that, you know, my one defense was like, I didn't have anybody to ask. I didn't have anybody to go and say, hey, what do I do? And I know people, I see people do screw stuff up. And it's like, just ask. Just go to somebody, send them like somebody, you know, like, hey, just take a look at this and tell me typographically, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong?
And that's the kind of thing we've talked a lot on this show about, you know, just in broad, whether you want to try to self-publish or self-distribute whatever your project is, or try to find a distributor, a publisher, a music label, X, Y, and Z. And those little things add up, right? If it can be one thing if you make, you know, the highest amount of percentage because you wrote the book and you edited it yourself, or you had a friend help you edit it and you made the cover and you did all the formatting. But if the cover's not great, if the design's not right, if the formatting looks weird, if X, Y, and Z happened, like I do think that's a place where learning those little cues are a value of huge value add of going to someone who can distribute your stuff and get that stuff right. I mean, not just do it to do it, but do it and actually learn from that experience.
So, I mean, I'll give you an example. Like I think I'm a believer, like if you want to make a career as a writer, like I think learn, go through those hoops of self-publishing and learn, because it'll take you a couple weeks to sort of like, it doesn't take long to understand the basics to make something look good. It's not as long as other stuff. And part of it kind of comes down to like, I'd take my first book that I used, like, you know, I had printed with like CreateSpace or whatever, and I'd pick up a quote real book, and I'd look at them side by side and go, what, forget the content. What am I? I'm like, okay, where does the copyright page go? How big is the font there? Okay. Yeah. Title page. Oh, there's the first page, the first four pages of the book don't have any page numbers on them, but they start page numbering later on. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, what tools do you use to do that? And then I would just study books, you know, like how many words per page? I just would understand. I'd look at a book, and that's why I get frustrated with people in the industry. Like, have you ever read a book? Like, what did you do wrong here? You know, and that was like, I realized the whole buy thing, because I put my first book said buy, you know, all my magic books said buy Andrew Main, you know. And then now I look at it and I feel so silly, because it's like, that just reeks of amateur. A lot of little things like that. But over time, you know, you accrue that. And if you have the opportunity for somebody to do it, like I have, I'm going to probably put my audio, a number of my originally self-published books, I'm making a deal with an audio book company. Ooh. You know, they wanted to publish those. Do they want to do audiobooks of those? Nice. And the hesitation was like, I've been kind of wanting to do them on my own because I have the money to go make them, do them right, whatever, but I don't have the time to do it. And I'm like, I've done stuff with this company before and they do a really good job. And so the opportunity is there for like, okay, I'm not, you know, I'll make a deal. I'm not going to get as much money as if I did it on my own and did it, you know, outright, but
you're also spending a lot less time on it.
Exactly. Like I look at it like, yes, I thought about doing this 2 years ago. And I can have a agreement with them for a certain period of time. I'm like, if I had, you know, I'm already 2 years into the period of which I was supposed to have done this. And am I going to do this foreseeably this year or next year? Like, no. So I'll get the rights back anyways after a period of time.
Yeah. And, I mean, especially like that gets you out of having to deal with more management of old books. Like this opens you up to write more books and keep like moving forward.
Yeah, there's a pro and con, you know. I gave up audiobook rights to some of my other self-published stuff, and I'm frustrated because I did it too cheaply. You know, because I was at a time when I was just, my head was other space, whatever, and I'm like, I'll do this, whatever. And I regretted that because like I felt like I just did not do the right deal on that. And that was sort of my knee-jerk reaction. And then now I've got a much better deal for the next ones and whatever, but still there's a point where you go like, no, that's not worth it. You know, like you're going to give up too much. But I also know that like, I know a lot about self-publishing books, audiobooks. It's still, you know, if I have a hankering to like, you know, self-publish audiobooks, like I've got so much unpublished stuff. Yeah. I'm like, I can pull one of those things out and do that.
And I think that that's a good lesson for anyone who is a creative listening to the show, is like, if you're looking into deals like this, like, make sure they have a shelf life, or make sure that there is a limit to the scope, right? Like, it'd be one thing if, like, if you're a musician, right, record labels really want these huge 360 deals where they own all of the rights to you know, all of the rights to your albums, and you go back through time and you look at the classic historical disputes between artists and labels, and the labels have them under their thumb for 10 plus albums, and the artists, you know, don't want to do it anymore, but they get stuck in these bad deals. So, like, make sure you keep, like, a bad deal is a bad deal, but it's only a problem if it if you can't stop it, or if you can't, if there's not limits to it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you continuously make content, then you're in a good position. And I think that I think for people to think about when you embark upon a new endeavor is you want to figure out what is. We talk about on the weird things how Elon Musk is building, wants to build 1,000 of these starships to basically colonize Mars, which these are the kind of things we should be saying in 2020. Person X is building a fleet of spaceships to go to Mars. It's nice to talk about them not in science fiction terms. And Bryce brought up the point about, like, well, will the 1,000th starship be the same as the first one? And the answer is no, they'll iterate over time. And that's the advantage of what Elon Musk is thinking, in the sense of the scale of how does he build. He wants to build, you know, he built, SpaceX has created a factory for, like, Falcon 9 rockets and engines, and he produces more of these than anybody else. And the amount of things that are in the period of time that SpaceX makes more engines per year than anybody else. Like, the number of engines they make is, like, equal to the total number of engines anybody else. Nobody's ever really made a spaceship factory. They build spaceship assembly facilities, but it's like, group of people here go. They're more akin, the way spacecraft are made and the shuttles made was more akin to the way the Model Ford was made, the Model T was made,
one at a time.
Then it's, yeah, then a 747. Even though you look, oh, it looks more like an airplane, but, like, yeah, Boeing has this with the one of the largest buildings on the planet, which is an assembly floor where things go in one end and come out the other. Where the way we build spacecraft is literally more like building a yacht. And what Elon Musk is doing is building this assembly line, but allowing himself the chance to iterate each time. With your newsletter, each newsletter, you got to go, oh, tweak it. Let me do this better. When I started writing novels, I said, well, I'm going to write 10 books in a year, because every book will be a learning experience. And the more I can learn, the better I'll get to the point where I feel like I'm a really strong writer. And that was a stupid, insane sort of goal to take on. But hey, I was single, you know, I was in Florida, had nothing else to do. So I spent a year writing book after book and iterating after that. And I advise anybody who's doing something creative, figure out where in the process you can iterate. You know, if you're a filmmaker, it's the script. It's really the script format. You know, you can start actually outline, iterate outline after outline after outline. And that's one of the things I do with books now, is I don't just go, oh, I finished an outline, let me write. I'm like, nope, I go rewrite that outline multiple times and change things, because, man, when I nail it, when I write the book, it's easy. If I don't nail it, writing the book is painful, and I wish I changed things there. So Find the point in your process where you can iterate over and over. And sometimes it's the final form. If you're doing podcasts, it's the podcast itself. It's each episode. Oh, we'll make this one better.
The first album that I made back in college was my senior project for this class, the sound class. And I had put the thing together, and it had like 11 songs on it. And the teacher listened to it, and, like, she gave me really good advice, which was like, yeah, this all sounds like you, but, like, what are you doing anything with this? Are you doing really anything? How are you breaking out with this? Right. That led me to take all of those original tracks and remix them all against themselves. And that became the primary album of what it was, and the idea was so much better, it sounds so much better conceptually, it makes a lot more sense. And if you're in that place where you don't know if you are able to continue to iterate, like, look at the things that you're doing and say, what if you did these in a way that wasn't like yourself? And you would be surprised at the amount of depth you can find, and the amount of improvement that you can make to something if you don't have any sacred cows about it. If you just say, yeah, I'm just going to go and mess this up and I'm going to make this less like the thing I would make now and more like the thing I will make next, which is a very floaty way to say that. But I think I stand by the message.
No, I think it's spot on. And it's that the problem is people have their masterwork and they spend all this time slapping things on it and putting it together, but not stepping back and tearing it apart and looking to where they need to improve it. And that's where growth happens. So, you know, look, every process has a point at which you can iterate and you can improve upon sometimes multiple spots. You know, your email newsletter, you know, you probably start with a little outline of it's going to be this story. And then that's one spot to iterate. And then the as a whole, your ability to produce the product comes out from, well, I'll put this out there and I'll see what I learned from and how to proceed.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think enough people pay enough attention to that.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's really valuable. And if there's someone that you follow, not just the people talking to you right now, but if there's anyone that you follow and you know that they are getting into the creative space, like, give them the breathing room and give them some trust and the chance to iterate, because I know, like, you need more time and more at bats, and the thing you can do to support someone is to keep giving them a few more at bats and give them, you know, look for growth, not just where is it right now, you know.
Yeah. And you know, let people know what works.
Yes.
You're not just like, no, not just what doesn't work, but what does, you know.
Yeah, majorly.
You know, that's the other part. It's funny. I'm putting together, I've got to send the audiobook files off to the company that's doing this, and or to my agent to send to them. And I had to like put in the rich text format, and then I'm in the process of like putting these things together. And I almost put, because I had to add my title to it, and I almost wrote by Andrew Main. It's just, why not?
Hey, you want to jump into some picks for After Things?
Yep.
I've got a pick, and it's really nice and I like it. I have to assume there's probably something better than this. Maybe you might have a better sense. I don't have a when it comes to writing, we've talked about drafts before on this program. Mm-hmm. I do like drafts. In fact, that last email, I wrote most of it in drafts, but what I finish almost all my writing stuff, all of the podcast notes that I do every week, anytime I need to write down a scratch pad, I use Notepad++, which is a free note process, text processor. It doesn't do rich text, and it might have support for it has a lot of like coding languages in it. So if you start typing in code, it'll do all the colors and start doing formatting stuff for you. I turn all of that stuff off and just do just plain text writing, but it has more settings than your Notepad does, but it's also, it loads up faster than say a Microsoft Word or a Google Doc. I've had so much trouble with Google Docs the past 2 weeks and them not staying connected and then losing data because I was in the middle of typing something, that, yeah. I really like having a local text pad, and Notepad++ does it for me.
Yeah, dude, I wrote a novel.
Yeah.
In Google Docs, which I thought was like this great idea until I realized it wasn't.
It's so frustrating. We use Google Docs for Chord Killers, and so I will, there are parts in that show that I write out and read during the show, and I just, the last 2 weeks I go and I start to write something and then reconnecting, and then when it finally gets back minutes later, it lost all the things that I wrote. It's there's a cloud.
Ah.
Well, and part of it is that as I've worked behind the scenes and like working on apps and stuff and document stuff, is you realize that like there's, when you build apps like Scrivener, which I think are great for long form, they also, there's a reason why they have chapters and stuff, because once text files or files get a certain length, you have to be using bits of code to sort of combine these sort of cells and stuff. And, you know, when you use a thing like Google Docs, you know, like all that text is in one thing, but then you start putting like the formatting and stuff. It's a lot of megabytes of stuff. And it also like, it's a reason, it just wasn't designed for that. It can do it sort of, but it can't do it reliably. And that's part of like, you realize like, oh, that's why the difference between a notepad, a text pad, and like a word processor.
Sure.
My pick, and actually it's what I've been opening and doing right now is, man, if you want to make an ebook and one to write it, Scrivener, I highly recommend. And Scrivener lets you output in different formats. But if you want a simple way to format it and elegantly deliver it, I am a big fan of Vellum. It's Mac only. If you go to vellum.pub, it is pricey. But for that money, it is so worth it. You import your Word doc or whatever you wrote your book in there, and then it makes it, if you've already got chapters, it'll automatically organize into chapters. It comes out with these beautiful layouts, and with the full version of Vellum, you click export. Not only do you get ebooks, it'll give you ebook formats for Apple Books, for Kindle, for all the other formats that look great. What size the paper, what size you're going to use if you're using like CreateSpace or Ingram Spark. You put in that little information like this, and it delivers beautifully done books. Like, I got one here, but I've done a number of books in Vellum. Mm. And I've talked to people like, oh, I thought about it. I think I'm going to use this other thing. And I'm like, a week from now, you're going to really wish you did this.
Yeah.
Because it's a couple $100. But that, what you get out of the value proposition there is, even if you only do one thing, it's great.
Yeah. So, you've been a big booster for Vellum for a long time now.
They solved a problem. Like if you have to produce eBooks and they solved a problem really well. They did came up with a beautiful solution for it. And like I said, people often go, it's a lot. But I'm like,
there are not too many, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are not very many high price costs in writing, I would guess.
Yeah.
You know,
And this is a one-time, they've changed their fee structure over time. Now it's a one-time thing you buy. And like I tell people like, oh, well, you know, would you pay somebody $250 to produce all of your ebook versions and your print version? I'm like, well, yeah. Like, what if I told you if you have it formatted right in Microsoft Word, you import it in there and all those things are ready to go?
Yeah.
You know, and also when you have to make a correction, you change one in one document and you click export and all five versions now have that correction, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so. I look at like to compare like the software that I use to make music, I have Ableton Live, which I purchased 6 or 7 years ago. And I bought the suite version, which is like the whole shebang. That was like $750. The standard version is like $450. And that is out of date right now. Like the one that I have is at least one release behind. So Scrivener seems like a good price. I mean, I pay $50 a month for the Adobe Creative Cloud stuff, and I don't own that stuff. And they get rid of old versions. Don't get me started on that. But if you're gonna get into it, do Scrivener, do it.
Yeah, I think you'll be glad you did. You know, and like I said, even if you only do one, you know, it's actually worth it for the quality that you get out of it.
Yeah.
So,
there you go.
Man, I'm excited about your progress, what you've been doing.
Thank you.
Again, I am. Always thrilling to see my friends doing cool stuff and making things happen and to stay at it. Your perseverance is encouraging, and I look forward to the continuing adventures of video games with Bryce.
Thank you. I'm excited to see the Lady in the Water. Is that what you said? The new book?
The Girl Beneath the Sea.
The Girl Beneath the Sea. Not the The Girl Beneath the Sea. Coming soon from Andrew Mayne.
Well, that's a fun thing. Yeah, like that's funny. Like, yeah, coming up with the titles, like the sequel comes out in November, which is called Black Coral. And I just sent the third one, the title for the third one, to my editors. Yeah. And it is that sort of like figuring out like what the theming is supposed to be, you know. Which is another thing, but yeah. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.